It's easy to lose sight of just how unreasonable Jesus actually is. Partly because we and our forebears have worked very, very hard to make him less so. Finding it impossible to actually live as Jesus instructs us, we have come up with justifications and rationalizations and approximations to make our failure feel more acceptable. We accuse Jesus, either openly or covertly, of being too much of an idealist, of failing to really take into account the complications of the real world, the necessary compromises that we have to make, whether at the level of the state or of the community or even at the level of our own all too human hearts. And so we cling, as we should, to the promise of forgiveness. And we set our sights on the kingdom to come some distant day. And we comfort ourselves that surely Jesus couldn't really expect us to do all that. I think he does. And when we fail to meet those expectations, as we most certainly will, I don't think Jesus is interested in excuses and explanations. I think rather he is interested in genuine repentance, so that we can genuinely receive the forgiveness that he is more than ready to give, and so that we can genuinely try to do better. Following Jesus means getting familiar with failure, but it doesn't mean getting complacent about it. Which is why Jesus' parables are often sort of unsettling. The parable we heard this morning comes near the beginning of a long stretch of teaching in the Gospel of Matthew, a kind of lecture on the subject of how to live in community. And this lecture was assembled by Matthew out of all of the things that people had remembered and recorded Jesus saying on the subject throughout his ministry. All these teachings brought together to address a deep need in Matthew's community of early Jesus followers, most of whom in that community were probably Jewish. And they were experiencing conflict and change in their wider Jewish world after the destruction of the temple. It was a time of great theological and cultural reorganization taking place. And so Matthew's community, in the midst of all of this, is sorting out, among other things, how Jesus' following does or does not fit into the life of the synagogue. How Jesus' following does or does not change their relationship to the Torah. How Jesus' following does or does not impact the way they relate to one another and to their non-Jesus following family, friends, and neighbors. There's a lot of figuring out going on, and something new is taking shape. A new church, a word that Matthew uses, but Jesus and Peter almost certainly didn't. People are working out what this church, this following together of Jesus, what it should look like. And the answer appears to be, it should look like the kingdom of heaven, which is like a king who releases his slave from 10,000 talents, which might as well be a gazillion dollars of debt. It is ridiculous. 10,000 talents is a ridiculous sum of money. It is gazillions of dollars. And the idea that anybody could get into that much debt in the first place is ridiculous. The idea that if somehow they managed to, that anyone could ever pay off that much debt is even more ridiculous. And then the idea that anyone would be forgiven that much debt is just beyond ridiculous. The whole thing is extravagant and excessive and unreasonable. And so we might take comfort in knowing that we could never be expected to uphold such a ridiculous, unreasonable standard. And so we argue 77 times, it doesn't really mean forgiveness without limit. It just means, for us, lots. And lots is a lovely, flexible word. But then we keep reading. And we leave behind the kingdom of heaven revealed in the King who is generous beyond measure, beyond reason. And we return with that slave back to the real world, the hard world of real numbers and real people and real sense. And we see that slave do something entirely reasonable, entirely within his rights. He demands that someone pay their regular size, realistic, reasonable debt back. We see that slave blessed and forgiven and freed walk out of the king's presence and reject the kingdom of heaven. We saw him take all that he had been given and just cast it aside, hardening his heart and refusing to join the king. And when word reaches the king of how his gift has been rejected, he calls that hard-hearted slave before him and says, "I set you free from so much, an unimaginable, incomprehensible amount. Beyond all reason, were you not bound to do likewise to your fellow slave in even a small way? Were you not bound to do likewise?" I hope that word bound caught your attention. It doesn't actually show up in our translation of this story, but it's there in the Greek, hiding in plain sight. We are still in the same conversation between Jesus and his disciples when he gave Peter the keys to the kingdom and the power to set loose on earth what has been set loose in heaven and to bind on earth what has been bound in heaven. We talked a few weeks back about the important distinction between being empowered to discern the will of God in order to bring earth in line with heaven and being authorized to dictate the will of heaven by enacting our own will on earth. We're still in that conversation. And now Jesus is providing some more instruction about what the kingdom of heaven is like so that his followers can fulfill this awesome responsibility that they have been given, so that we can work to bring ourselves and our community and all of creation into alignment with heaven. And when we fail, we find ourselves outside the kingdom, having chosen to reject that world in favor of one where we get to exercise our own will, make ourselves powerful at the expense of others, make ourselves righteous at the expense of others. And it turns out that that world, although it might seem pretty great, while we're enjoying the temporary fruits of our power, is actually pretty awful. It is unforgiving and angry. It treats people as problems or as tools or as threats instead of as people. It creates mistrust and fear and a constant struggle to get what's yours, even if it means that someone else might go without. And that world might seem reasonable, unfortunate, but reasonable, inevitable even. But that's only because we keep playing by its rules. Those aren't the rules we're supposed to be playing by. We're supposed to be playing by God's rules. And we don't even need to have God's capacity for forgiveness. That hard-hearted slave was not asked to forgive a debt of a gazillion dollars. But we are expected, we are bound to play by the same rules as heaven, to be a finite expression of God's infinite forgiveness, to allow what we have been given to pour through us and into the world, shaping our every interaction, our every political stance, our every purchase, our every conversation, our every thought into something worthy of the kingdom. Forgiveness without limit. Loving our enemies as ourselves. Sharing all that we have and all that we are. And if this doesn't seem reasonable, it's because it's not. Jesus was not terribly concerned with reasonable. Jesus was concerned with the kingdom of heaven. And so the question for us is, which world would we rather live in? And what are we prepared to do to make that happen?